Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Jana and Jason podcast. We are living lucky. Isn't that right?
That is correct.
You know why I say that is because I have been on this new Clubhouse app, which for those of you that don't know, it's this app where you actually speak into your phone, and it's a social media platform, but for speakers, it's my place to go. It's like a marketplace of ideas, wouldn't you think?
Yes, and I love that you speak into your phone.
Right.
Yeah.
It's crystal clear. You're not depending on algorithms of TikTok or of YouTube to send it out to people. You're literally depending on your skill, your knowledge, your ability to connect to other people.
And how often can you walk into a room, which is kind of how Clubhouse is set up?
A virtual room.
Yeah, you can walk into this virtual room and you have the ear of the 10 people that are in there, the 1,000 people that are in there, the 2,000 people that are in there. I mean, it's limitless, really. And it's just amazing that you can jump on stage in your room.
Yesterday I was on stage.
And speak.
I was speaking to Greg Louganis yesterday.
Heard you. I was in the audience.
I mean, we were having a conversation like we were equals.
All buddies.
Ah!
Well, you're both Olympic athletes, so I'll put you on the equals.
The reason I bring up Clubhouse app is because I happened to be in this room and I met a very, very interesting, intriguing coach. He's a procrastination coach. And his name is Dean Fox.
Well, I'm glad you didn't wait to call him.
I put it off as long as I could. Trust me. I actually did. I put it off to next week. I was like, I'll call you next week. But I figured, you know what? Jason and I are all about living our best life. And part of that is sometimes facing your fears, facing that uncomfortable zone, trying new things. And sometimes I don't know why. Why do we sometimes put things off? Things that, like for me, it's answering emails. I hate to answer emails.
I'm sure there's a ton of reasons, but I can tell you that there's no forward movement without action. I mean, you have to put one foot in front of the other, right?
Right. There's some things that I love to do and I'm so naturally motivated, but then there's other things that I literally have this, that's the feeling that comes up.
I hear you make that noise sometimes.
Right? Yep. You do. So I'm welcoming to the program Mr. Dean Fox, all the way from the UK. Welcome, Dean. How are you today?
I'm fantastic. Thanks for having me on the show. It's a pleasure.
Yes. Okay, first of all, what provoked you to become a procrastination coach? Actually, you told me earlier you actually are a performance coach, but your expertise is procrastination. So
yeah,
what made you go this route?
It was one of those things I discovered over my time, my own personal journey and working on myself and also working with other clients. I discovered that there are four things I think that kill more businesses and dreams than anything else. And at the top of that list is procrastination. So the other three are perfectionism, fear of public speaking, and fear of rejection.
I have three of the four. What do you have, Jason?
I would say procrastination is mine.
I definitely have procrastination, perfectionism, and I fear being rejected. I really do.
Yeah. And that's not unusual. Lots of people, you know, across the business and entrepreneurial sector struggle with the same things. That's what I struggled with as well. So that's kind of what got me into it, is that I started to focus on the things that I needed to change and then helping other people do the same.
Hey, Dean, just would you, now you're the expert in this area, but when I think about procrastination and then I think about perfectionism, fear of public speaking, and fear of rejection, especially the perfectionism and fear of rejection, are those two things that actually lead into procrastination?
Yeah. So what I discovered is that because there's those top four things, the reason I say that they are the top four is not only because of the people that I've coached and who've said the same things, but also I discovered that Some of the underlying issues in each of those behavior patterns are similar, so they're linked across. So if you find somebody who's got some of the issues around procrastination, one of those is likely to be something around mistakes and failure are bad. They've got this belief that making a mistake and failing is not a good thing. But that also sits in perfectionism, and it also sits in the fear of public speaking, for example.
So, question, in my experience, I work with a lot of life coaches. And in my experience, the reason that people pick a particular niche is because they've had to overcome this themselves. Is this something that you've had to really dig deep and figure out for you?
Yeah, so absolutely. You know, I my corporate background's in sales and business development, and in relative terms, procrastination, fear of rejection was a big one for me. Fear of public speaking also. I mean, I was good at it, but there's a difference between being good at something and still struggling with the underlying issues.
Right.
So people would say, well, you're great at speaking. How have you got a fear of public speaking? I'm like, well, because I'm very good at putting a face on and getting out there and doing something. But that doesn't mean I'm not terrified every time I get asked to do it. And so it was my quest to overcome some of those things, as well as some other things that happened in my life that led me to that point.
Like what? That's where I was going. Like what? Tell us the story.
Let's peel it back.
Okay. So I kind of had a fairly successful corporate career. You know, I was a national sales manager for a blue chip company in the UK. I ran a team of salespeople across the country. We managed 7-figure accounts. We had expense account, company car, all the usual things that most people would say on the outside appears like a successful life. But I never really felt like that underneath. I always felt like I was going to be found out, like I wasn't really good enough to be doing what I was doing, that somewhere along the line, somebody was going to find out that I wasn't actually that good. And it comes from this idea that I was always driven to feel successful in some way. I was always looking for, I developed what I call this when-then mentality. So when I have this, then I'll feel good enough, or then I'll feel successful.
Oh, I know a lot of people suffer from that. Like, oh, if I just achieve this, then that's when I'll consider myself successful. But the thing is once they...
That's when my dad'll love me.
Once they take that next step on the ladder, then the standards always increase, it seems.
100%. And that's exactly what happened. That's what got me on my journey, this treadmill of what's next. So I left my corporate career in the early 2000s because I felt that having reached a reasonably high level, that the only way I could prove that I was good enough and feel successful was if I did that for myself, if I left and set up my own business. And so that's what I did in the early 2000s. And my wife and I grew a property business fairly successfully over about 6 years to multi-six figures here in the UK. And then in 2008, the financial crisis happened and we lost that business in 2009. And that, you know, put some financial pressure on us. And so I made the decision to go back into the corporate world to steady the ship, if you like, in early 2010. And then my wife, myself, and my youngest son were involved in a near fatal car accident in March of 2010. And that stopped me going back into the corporate world for about 8 months.
Oh, did you recover?
Yeah. So we recovered physically. And the biggest thing for me was that period of time, kind of, I suppose, like a lot of people have had over the last year, maybe around the pandemic. It just left me sitting effectively in my own thoughts for, 8 months. And those thoughts were not very good at that particular point in time. And they led me down a fairly dark path. You know,
when it gets dark, that seems to be when we really start finding out who we are. Would you agree with that?
100%.
Go ahead. I'm sorry, Dean.
I drove myself to a point in December of that year where, I didn't think there was any other way out. I tell the story that I left home one morning saying to my wife that I was going to get some fresh air and go and kind of have a think about where we went next. And the truth was I didn't have any intention of coming home that day. You know, I left and went to some woodland where we lived and made the decision to take my own life. But it was in that moment that things changed for me. You know, I'd like to say overnight, but it wasn't. It was just that that moment was my defining. It's what I call these, you have these things in life called turn back moments, where you could turn back and just give up and do, and that's where I was at. But when you kind of just continue another step, something happens that changes and takes you on a new journey. And that's kind of what happened for me. That's what led me into trying to figure out why I ended up where I did. You know, what? Why did I feel the way I did? Why did I do the things I did? And more importantly, for me, why didn't I do some of the things I knew I could have done along the way? And that led me into investigating these issues, you know, the patterns of behavior that I developed. Where did they come from, and how could I overcome them so I didn't make the same mistakes again when I started my next phase of the journey, if you like.
So where do these patterns come from? Why is it that we tend to put things off? Why is it that we, I mean, sometimes even if we are clear with our direction or maybe our overall vision, there's just certain things that we, our inner essential self does not want to do. Why is that? What's going on there?
Yeah, and what I discovered, I have a concept, if you like, that I developed, which is called the Jenga concept.
Nice.
So you know the wooden block game Jenga?
Mm-hmm. So I'm really good at that. I always beat Jason. Always.
So if you imagine the Jenga tower being a pattern of behavior, the pattern of behavior is built on a set of blocks, just like the Jenga tower.
Mm-hmm.
And if you take some of those blocks away in Jenga, the tower becomes unstable. But unless you remove either all of them or half a dozen key ones, the tower doesn't collapse. It might be unstable, but it doesn't collapse. And that's what happens with behavior patterns like procrastination. We do work, we learn some strategies, some techniques, some things which help to remove some of the blocks, but actually the tower still stands. And so at some point in the future, it's going to come back. It's going to repeat again because the pattern is still there. So unless we remove all of the blocks that support that tower, or more importantly, we remove the ones that cause the tower to collapse, then we're never ever free from the pattern of behavior permanently. It's always there in the background. And whenever something comes up that triggers that pattern, we fall back into it. And then we stop, we procrastinate again, we start putting off again.
Yes.
So
that you just named it, because I know that there's certain things that happen. And the first thing I do is I stop answering emails and I go lay on the couch and I get under my heating blanket, don't I, Jason? And it all comes down to, it's usually emails for me. That's my thing that I procrastinate. So what is your solution? How do you remove these blocks?
So what I discovered is that if we took, for example, if we took procrastination on its own, there are 19 blocks and around about 5 conditionings that support that pattern of behavior. And that's come from, you know, lots of the research that I've done, but also working with clients. But the important thing is that everybody has their own unique code. It's like a combination to a safe. Everybody's is different. So although there's 19, we don't all have the same 19. There's perhaps 2 or 3 common ones that most people have, but we all have a different combination. And they come from our experiences, usually in our early years, our formative years, up to about age 7. When we define our identity in essence. And all we do from there on in is we look to validate that to be true. And so the real truth about ending behavior patterns like procrastination is to first of all figure out which of those 19 blocks are the ones that affect you. In other words, which ones, if we push out, will collapse the tower the fastest. And then work on eliminating them permanently. And to do that, I work with my clients for them to understand where they came from in the first place. Because most of us think that the blocks that we have, you know, the blocks are just mental blocks. They're just beliefs that we have.
Right. They're like limiting beliefs. Is that what you're saying? Is that what a block is?
Yeah. And most people, you know, up until a few years ago, the word limiting belief, you know, no one had heard of it. it was just things that we didn't understand about ourselves. Why do we do these things?
Mm-hmm. We knew our mother and father put these ideas in our head. We just didn't know how effective they were at limiting what we accomplish.
For sure. 100%. And this is the thing is that, you know, people, two things happen, I think. One is that the first issue for most people is that once they form these beliefs and look to validate them, you know, when I'm working with people, the number of people who say, oh, that's just me, I'm just a born procrastinator. And it's like, okay, so now we have an issue because, first of all, you're now saying that that's your identity.
Oh, so
that's my birthright. That way.
And if that's the case, how are we ever going to change it?
Oh, that's good, because we just watched a documentary on how to dissolve a limiting belief, and one of the tips was to make it part of your identity. Yeah. So if you're saying the limiting belief is part of your identity, that's just embedding it into your subconscious,
which is kind of 100%. What limiting beliefs are they've kind of designed themselves to become part of your identity through your subconscious.
Question. Yeah. Can you learn to use procrastination, for example, to your advantage? Because I know some people who have a term paper to write and they think, oh, I just don't want to do it. I just don't want to do it. But however, they have learned through the years of their procrastination that 2 hours before that term paper is due, they can literally sit down and focus to the point where it just flows out of them. Yes, it's almost like they've learned to use that procrastination and turn it into some sort of hyper.
And I wonder if maybe
creativity.
That's a defense mechanism, but so that they can excuse the procrastination. Because if you can do that 20 minutes before your paper's due, you theoretically should be able to set that timeline deeper in the present.
Yeah. Well, let's ask the coach. What do you think, Dean?
Yes, I agree entirely with what Jason said, is that most people say that, what I do is I use my procrastination in order to be productive. My answer to that is, no, you're not doing that. What you're doing is you understand that you're going to struggle to do that. Your procrastination is stopping you. But you know that when you have an absolute stop deadline, that you will get something done. But I agree with Jason. What I say to them is, how more effective would you be if you could use the same focus in the 2-hour period, but do it 6 weeks ahead of schedule instead of 2 minutes before it's supposed to be due?
Yeah, that's good. I have one last thing, and then we'll let you go. But I also feel with procrastination, there's this heaviness. There's a feeling of worry, and it's stressful, isn't it?
And it's compounding. It's not something that is like, I'm going to worry about this at this level. It's a compounding, because for me, it compounds. It develops shame around it.
It's like my emails. Yes, it's like my emails that I haven't returned, and now I'm ashamed.
And because there's no progress, no forward motion, and which forward motion tends to lend its thought to there's an end in sight.
Yes.
Because there's none of that, it's just worse.
And if I just got up early in the morning and spent even an hour period just knocking out 10 of them, that would make the weight lift off my shoulders so immensely. Dean, what do you think about that?
Yeah, absolutely, 100%. And the reason for that, it's twofold, I suppose. But the first thing is that because the beliefs that underpin that behavior pattern exist within our identity, they are linked to our self-worth, whether we think we're good enough. All of those beliefs form that. So it becomes an identity issue for us. That's why it's so strong. The second thing is that what happens is, and I alluded to this earlier on, and you actually said it, Jana, is this idea that, you know, I know what I should do. I know I've got these things, and I know if I did 10 on a morning, it would all be over and I'd be fine, but we don't do it. And so what happens is we get to a point where we start to then validate some of the underlying beliefs. So we say, well, I haven't done it. Then we feel bad about not doing it. Then we start to unpick at ourselves and beat ourselves up about why we didn't do it. And we look at that, validates the belief even stronger. Well, the reason I don't do that is because I'm not good at doing that then.
Yeah, it becomes a doom loop. And we start beating ourselves up. And you guys are exactly right. I'm so glad I ran into you in the virtual clubhouse room, Coach Dean. Thank you. This has been great. How can people find you?
So they can reach out to me. I'm on Clubhouse, and I'm on most of the other social channels with the same handle, at Dean Fox Coaching. Or they can get me at my website, which is either deanfoxcoaching.com or deanafox.com.
All right. We'll put the link in the comments below.
Real quick, Dean, I just imagine, especially with COVID and maybe even before COVID, that you are working internationally and have capabilities of helping people all across the planet.
Yeah, so even before COVID, I had clients around the world. It was an interesting thing, though. Just we're talking about procrastination and about how, you know, even though I understand the pattern, there are things that crop up as you work on yourself. So a question came to me about 3 or 4 months ago, which was during COVID, I was looking to find a way to run some of the events that I used to run live, face-to-face, in person. How do I run those now? And so I've started to run them virtually, which is great because it means that people from some of my clients and contacts from the US and around the world can still come on those events, whereas previously they couldn't.
Right.
But it struck me the other day as to, so why have I waited for COVID to come around before I did that? That technology existed 5 years ago.
Right. That was your turn back moment. Yeah. Having that realization.
Yeah. So it's always a work in progress in terms of what are we thinking? What do we believe to be true that's stopping us doing something?
Awesome.
That is fantastic.
Thank you so much, Coach Dean Fox. That's who it is. DeanFoxCoaching.com. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Thank you again. From the UK, he will stop your procrastination.
Now.
Now.
Thank you so much,
Dean. Have a great day.
Pleasure talking to you.
All right, bye-bye.
Pleasure. Thank you.
That's awesome.
Woo!
I want to talk to Dean some more.